this is Krista Bender, and you're listening to AV Power Up on Rave Radio.
Oh my God, this is a mad sound guy, Chuck Espinosa, and I don't know why I'm here, because I'm looking Darth Vader, but I'm feeling Jar Jar. So anyway, you're going to be listening to us here on AV Power Up.
Yes, you are.
Hi, this is Hope Roth, and you are listening to AV Power Up.
Hi, this is Rich Prevetti. Look for me at Hot Jobs Rich. Look for me on the web. But whatever you do, don't follow me.
Please don't.
This is Johnny Moda, also known as J-Bot, because I might go Robo later on the show. You're listening to AV Power Up. In case I forget, it might have an AV brownout.
And I'm Corey Moss, at CB Moss on you know where, Corey Moss on you know what, yeah, with the E. And you are listening to, what day is it today? A Wednesday. AV Power Up on Rave Pubs Radio with your host, the Wrangling Redhead. What's her name, Chuck?
Ah, is this thing on?
Nice.
Krista Bender.
Good. Drop and give me 50. Take it away, Krista.
Hi.
No, really,
for,
drop and give me 50.
Shut up. Thanks for tuning in and listening to the show. And we're trying to not have Corey talk as much tonight. I want to take the chance and thank our sponsor, Ingram Micro. Check out their website, ingrammicro.com, to find out how they can help you with your AV and IT needs. And if you're like Rich, go ahead and throw the W's in front of that. Hey, Rich, do you have any listeners you want to thank?
Yes, I do. I want to shout out to at MikeT422. Mike Tracy, thanks for listening. We also have at ClearCom Systems. Thanks, guys, for tuning in. And last but not least, my friend, we went to different schools together, RD Randy Rowe. Thanks for listening, Randy. And stick around to the end of the show, because we have some great, great jobs to talk about. Thank you, Tier PM.
Hey, you know Randy Rowe's in Canada?
That's why we went to different schools together.
Oh, is that right? Oh, just like that guy, Matt Scott. He's the worst Canadian, though.
He's leaving on a jet plane right now.
He is. He's up in the what is that, Hope? Where is he going?
Texas.
No. Oh, sorry. He was up in the sky seeing those white puffy things.
Oh, he went to the clouds?
That's right. He sure did. To the cloud. Yeah.
So we have three guests on the show right now. Let's see. One is a special call-in, so we have Jeremy Caldera with us. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey.
Jeremy decided to hop on a train, eat questionable food, and not teach a class tonight. And we also have Chris Tatton.
Tatton.
You know, introduce yourself, Chris.
Chris Tatton.
Thank you. I keep seeing it and seeing Tatooine.
Chris not Tatton. The worst I've ever been called.
Yeah, Chris Tatton is here. Thanks, Chris. And
let's call him Jabba the Hutt, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wrong, dude.
And then our third and final guest is our number one fanboy, Billy Seiler. Hi, Billy.
Hi, I am your number one fanboy.
He really is. My God.
That's sad, man.
Well, I don't have anything else to do, so I might as well listen to you guys all the time.
That's like one step below being on this show all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're going to have to send him a fruit basket or something.
That actually makes me feel good, that statement. Strangely enough.
Send him a fruit basket?
Yeah, that one too. I'm in on that one. I'm in on the fruit basket, okay?
You will be getting Corey's fruit basket.
That sounds amazing to me. I'm happy. Bring it on.
Corey's fruit basket is 137 fruit roll-ups.
Billy?
Oh, that's even better.
I can't believe you just admitted that, Billy. That's great.
Krista, how do you know this guy?
Actually, how I know Billy is he was a customer of mine, and then through the magic of Twitter, I found out he was at Infocom at the same time as me last year, and we met up, I think it was like the first night, and then we, I think it was the first night, and then we walked
we
the
ran
floor.
Into each other at a bar, didn't we?
Yeah, we ran into each other at a bar. That's where I meet all my men.
Was that the karaoke bar?
It was the karaoke bar.
Wait, there was singing involved?
Nailed it.
Wow. Yep.
And then we ended up walking the floor because I didn't realize he was best buds and former roommates with our QSC rep. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's how we know each other. Now he's one of my frenemies, kind of like Mike Shin, because Billy works for another integrator that's not where I work.
You know, Mike was on last week, and he's one of our big listeners, and now Billy's one of our big – I think we need to make more frenemies for you. They'll, you know, they become good listeners of ours, Krista.
Yeah, people like me.
Okay, anybody out there, if you're listening, you have friends, tell them to frenemy – what do you say? You frenemy Krista, okay?
I decide if they're my frenemy.
Oh, Krista has to decide.
If I straight up don't like them, I'm not talking to them, Corey.
Okay, well, follow her on Twitter, piss her off, and then, you know, make her an enemy, become an enemy of, what am I trying to say? Of
hers? Right, I don't know, put the duct tape on. So, Hope, tonight we were trying to talk about some programming stuff, so that's why I have Chris on the show with us, because you guys have a little bit of a history as well. I believe you two met at the Crestron Masters event last year.
Yeah, that's correct. We were both at Crestron. For anybody that doesn't know, puts on an annual master's class for all their certified programmers. And this year they did it as one large event. So there were, 500 or so certified programmers all in one building.
It was a nerd convention.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyways, I wanted to talk tonight about the lack of quality programmers in our industry. Because if anyone who has been listening to our show for a while, one of the hot jobs that stays hot week after week is often Crestron programmers. I mean, there aren't even all that many mediocre programmers out there. There's just not enough programmers. And we have some folks here who are at different stages in their programming career, so I thought it would be a nice conversation to get their thoughts on it. I know a lot of people come into the AV industry because they wanted to, run soundboards or be musicians, and then AV ends up being more lucrative. I think one of the biggest problems we have with finding good programmers is that AV is less lucrative than going into software development. So you have to either find people who have an aptitude but haven't done something like computer science, or you have to find people who have done computer science like I did but decided that AV was more fun. And I think that's pretty hard to do. So I was just sort of interested in how our guests got into programming, and also just what everyone's thoughts are on what we can do as an industry to find more programmers.
Well, personally, I got into programming, I got into the AV industry pretty much by accident. I went to school for comp sci. I didn't finish, but ended up as a between semester job at one point, working for an integrator because I had a friend whose father was the director of engineering at the time. Kind of one thing led to another, and I ended up staying on board because I liked the work, and it was at the time, it was fun. And then, fast forward, 15 years later and, still doing it. But I do think you're right that there are the programming side of the AV industry has always been a situation where there are some good people out there, and you find a lot of people out there that don't really quite know exactly what they're doing with things, that they were kind of pressed into service from smaller integration shops where they needed somebody to potentially take on that role, and they were either elected to do it or forced to do it, being the most senior person at the time, even though they had no experience with it. And it doesn't lead itself into it's not a very conducive environment for fostering quality in that way. Because, either people aren't necessarily interested in it. They're just doing it because they feel like it's something they have to do, or it's not for them.
I think that's a great point. I think you also have a problem when someone gets, as Johnny would say, voluntold to be a programmer. that if there's nobody else at their shop, then there's no one for them to learn from. So I know, you know, everyone who is a Crestron certified programmer has done the Crestron trainings, and they start you at the beginning and they take you through some of it, but you really can't learn everything you need to learn at Crestron trainings. You have to practice on your own. You have to learn on your own. And I mean, I have a degree in computer science, and I don't think I would be half as good an AV programmer if I hadn't had such a great mentor when I first started doing this. And so much of what I know, I learned from him and, you know, his mistakes. So I think you definitely have a problem with the smaller shops as well if they don't have somebody that they can learn from.
No, I think that's an excellent point. And, you know, one of the things that's really kind of difficult, specifically when you talk about Crestron programming, is that Crestron programming in simple Windows is very different from what you would see in a traditional, you know, programming class or programming course at the collegiate level, you know, where you're looking at more you know, object oriented or straight line code. Crestron Simple Windows is none of that. You know, there's the Simple Plus component to it, and now recently the Simple Sharp component to it, which is, you know, a sandboxed version of C Sharp. But at that base, it's nothing like what 90%, if not more, programmers have seen before, which makes it very difficult.
Yeah. No, and actually I've had people at Crestron tell me that one of the reasons that they implemented Simple Sharp and Simple Sharp Pro is so they could draw from computer science graduates, because even they had a hard time finding good programmers and people to hire for internships or even just, you know, fresh out of school. Because if you could go to, you know, Silicon Valley and work as a sort of classic developer making six figures right out of college, like, why would you want to go work in this tiny little niche industry doing weird stuff that nobody's ever heard of? So if you can say, you know, here's a language that you're at least, you know, somewhat familiar with, that you can do things that are object oriented, that has libraries, that is line code, I think that's a great way to pull people in. But I think that's great for Crestron. And then I think that the next leap is probably finding people at integrators. Cause I don't think most integrators would just hire a recent CompSci grad who had never done any sort of AV programming. Cause I just don't think they would have the resources to train them up.
Yeah. Well, that's another great point, is that there's a lot of, but programming AV systems is really two components. You have that programming side of things where you have to have the programming chops and expertise in order to be able to solve some of these problems. But on the other hand, you need to make sure that you have enough experience with the actual equipment and working with completed AV systems to be able to kind of put all those pieces together. You know, if you've never worked with a Cisco codec before and you have no idea what that box does, you can read that API and you know, yeah, sure, you can write code for it, but you have no idea how to present that to a user.
Yeah, that's a great point. So, you also don't know what the pitfalls are, and you don't understand even just about simple muting, audio conference, how do we keep things together, you know, how do things get out of sync, things like that. I'm sorry.
What I think is also really interesting is that, you know, this is the, although Crestron started with their sandbox version of C Sharp recently, you know, it was at least 5 years ago that AMX implemented the ability to use Java within their environment, you know, with, again, the idea of let's get, you know, more experienced programmers that have experience in different languages, more of your traditional programmers that would go into, you know, web development houses or work at typical software companies. Let's try to get them into the AV industry. And it doesn't seem like it really made much of a difference for them, unfortunately.
I think it's probably actually harder to find AMX programmers than it is to find Crestron programmers at this point. Does anybody else have any thoughts, or should we just continue nerding out?
Hey, Hope, just to back up your early thoughts, your early comment about finding Crestron programmers, quick search on my favorite job search website, TierPM.
there's an early TierPM plug. Real good, Rich.
Reopen jobs. Chicago Chicago, Dallas, and Minnesota.
Yeah.
Nope, so, nothing here in DC Metro.
Nothing.
Oh man, and I swear I've been studying AMX for so long now.
Yeah. No. It's Crestron. It's listed as Crestron.
Oh, Crestron. No wonder I'm not going to get the job. No, I'll tell you, it's interesting, Hope. Out here, it's a very heavy AMX usage in the federal government. The federal government is pretty much known for being heavy AMX. So I guess out here,
because they're JITSE certified.
I guess. I really all I know is that there is a heavy concentration with AMX here in federal government. That could be the case. So, you know, where you talk about out here in DC Metro, and Chuck obviously knows the landscape here, so, you know, you could probably talk better to that.
Well, there's a lot of both houses, I would say, and I know a majority of the shops around here have several platforms of programmer. You know, they have AMX, they have Crestron, they have guys that do Xtron programming because there's some places that, believe it or not, still want Xtron control systems. They have guys that are doing all three, guys that know all three. I know several good programmers around the area that are Crestron masters and AMX masters, and they're they're straight up programmers for these things, and they get called all the time. They freelance. Some work for companies. My big curiosity, and this is kind of to Chris, Billy, and Hope, is from a training standpoint, you know, I've trained a lot of integrators where I get kids, and I find kids that have literally like 18 years old right out of high school, find them working at an auto shop on a Friday night, like, you know, in high school, working on an old truck. And I can get that kid with a work ethic and turn him into an AV tech. So that's kind of my ideal situation for building a tech. What would, if you had the ideal situation for building an AV programmer, what would that be?
You know, I'm actually really curious to hear what Chris and Hope have to say, because that's actually what my job is right now. I'm hired in as an entry-level programmer, and they're going to put me through the ringer in training. And I mean, I'm going to Crestron at the end of the month, and by January or February, they're expecting me to be certified. So, I mean, it's basically like you're going to go and you're going to get certified to be a Crestron programmer, or you won't work here. I don't know. I mean, I'll find out, I guess, in a couple months, but hopefully that's not the case.
Is so that when I get the phone call? Hey, Krista, I want to come work with you.
Yeah, and that's because I don't want to go back to working for a nonprofit.
Hey!
Wait a minute. You know, all those nonprofit fans of ours, they just tuned out. Well, you know, come on, be careful, no, right?
I was the nonprofit fan, and then I went to go work for a for-profit place. So you don't have any more nonprofit fans, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they're all gone now. All two of them. We have five left now. So thanks, Billy.
But I am curious to see what Chris and Hope have to say about that.
Well, I think Billy brings up an interesting point regarding, you know, going to Crestron for training. You know, Crestron is obviously offers a lot of training classes, offers a certification program. But Crestron cannot, and for that matter, no real programming or control system manufacturer can teach you how to be a programmer in a 5-day class. You know, there are people that spend many thousands of dollars at colleges to learn how to be a legit programmer. And it's not just learning the interface and learning the tools and learning, you know, learning how to navigate through simple windows and plug a couple symbols together. You actually have to work at it and learn how to solve some of the problems that you encounter in the real world. You know, Crestron can show you how to tie together and interlock, and they can show you how to use OR gates and AND gates. And to some extent, they can show you how to work with Simple Plus, but they cannot teach you to be a programmer.
That is definitely true. I would have spent six figures on a computer science degree, but I had some pretty sweet financial aid. Thank you, Trinity College. Sorry, little shout out. I think the biggest thing about to be a programmer is there's a certain level of aptitude that you need to have, and then there's a certain amount of work that you have to put into it. And you need some math skills. You need a lot of logic skills, critical thinking. You need to be able to think it's almost like your program is a game of chess, and you have to stay, you know, six steps ahead of your end user. Okay, how are they going to break this system, and how am I going to keep them from breaking it? If they hit this button, and then they turn this on, and then they go and they hit a button on the TV, and everything gets out of sync, how do I get it back into sync so they don't call my boss up on a Saturday? That's a big part of AV programming, is just thinking about how someone could mess with your system and how you keep that from happening. Or also just, okay, if I have my system do this, you know, what happens if I have a timeout and, you know, the CEO is in the room and nobody touches the touch panel and everything just shuts off in the middle of the meeting? You know, do I pop up an alert so people know that the system is about to shut down? Will the alert annoy people? A lot of it is asking questions as well, figuring out, you know, who your end user is, what's going to bother them, what they think is not going to bother them, but you know will bother them in about 2 weeks. I do a lot of advanced pages where you can turn features off. So when they call me 3 weeks later, yeah, I know I said I wanted the system to do this, but man, that's annoying. Yeah, just press and hold this hidden button I put. That'll bring you into the advanced menu and just turn that off. All right, done.
So it sounds like there's a component. There's several components here. First, you have to know how AV systems work. You have to know the AV gear, not just how the goes into and comes out as they're doing, but how the gear reacts with each other. And like you were saying, you were talking about timeouts. You have to know the specs of that gear. What, like, how long is it going to take a projector to fully cool down so you can put that weight on your off button? So you have to know the AV component. Secondly, you have to know how humans work, right? I mean, you design your, the old thing was, you know, three button presses to get me from nothing to an action to happen, like source here or something, page source here. And now I'm hearing people say, yeah, that's too many. Three button presses is too many. I want to walk in the room and it be on. So you have to really, really get into the technology and stay up with what's happening and be able to integrate that technology into how humans work. So that's the second component. And the third component is, you know, in the Marine Corps, we call it G2, it's intelligence. You have to have that intelligence to be able to put those ones and zeros and make them work right. I know I've had programmers that have looked at other programs that people have built and said, they did 10 steps where they could have done four and this thing's going to work a lot better. So how do you get the, you know, you can get somebody who's got a computer science degree, say they've already got a little bit of like basic computer programming. They come in, you have to teach them that AV portion and you have to teach them that design portion, or you have a designer who knows the AV portion and you've got to teach them the programming portion, or you can have a tech that knows, well, I know what pieces work with what. Now I have to teach them the human part and the ones and zeros. So how does a company make that investment? I mean, if you think about it, I'm paying you to train to do this job that I need done. And when you get done, you're going to want more money. Like, I just paid for your education and then you're going to want more money. How do you get companies to do that?
You just summed everything up perfectly, Chuck. And I think it's very hard because there's three very important qualities, and without all three of them, you're going to be a mediocre programmer at best. I would say that the most important quality would probably be logical and critical thinking. And then you can teach somebody the AV portion of it. The human part is difficult, especially since most people who are logical and critically thinking oriented don't always think human. But you know, that's something that experience will teach you, how your end users are going to break your stuff. I think it is definitely hard to find computer science majors just because they have so many options. I mean, computer science even qualifies you for law school because of that logical. Yeah, actually, like a lot of the people I went to school with are lawyers now because you have to do so much. You know, I took a whole semester just on logic. And that translates very well into, you know, building an argument and building a case.
So if computer science prepares you for law, for to be a lawyer, what does a law degree prepare you for?
You have to be able to say, do you want fries with that?
you know, I thought about going to law school, like, you know, 6 or 7, no, I'm probably more like 8 or 9 years ago at this point. And a friend of mine talked me out of it, and I really should just send her flowers every year.
I was going to say that. You have a very good friend.
Well, no, I should say something, because my daughter is going to law school, and if she said, Dad, I think I want to go into the AV industry. I say, no, no.
She'd probably have an easier time finding a job in the AV industry.
I'm going to say call Hope Roth.
maybe the problem of not enough AV programmers could be solved by hiring out-of-work lawyers.
Well, so, maybe I'll put that bug in her head, you know?
So here's an idea.
Call Hope Roth.
We get these guys in college that are studying computer science, and I don't know, maybe try and sway them to some type of AV class, right? Mm-hmm. So then they come in the AV class, and they can learn a little bit about design, a little bit about the integration portion, and you know, while they're taking these classes on AV with this computer science class background, this computer science background, they can get a little bit of experience and maybe take some design classes like or psychology classes to think about how the brain works. And I think we have somebody on the line that actually has students like this.
I like your headset, Chuck. I really do. And I actually had just a student last year that we now picked up to do AV programming, and she's going to Crestron training in 2 weeks. So I think after that, we're going to send her to AMX. So I think I'm hoping and thinking that she's going to pick that up really well.
Yeah, that's kind of the way to we need to start structuring the future of our industry, you know? I mean, stuff has to get into the colleges, and it has to get into the high schools.
Well, what I find interesting is, you know, to the topic of conversation you guys have been talking about, you know, with my student Victoria that I ended up hiring, she, you know, had that computer science background and that logical thinking and that knowledge, and then discovered her love of AV, you know, which is what that really takes. And then that's why she geared her career into that direction. And I think, like we said, that is, you know, just two of the aspects, the human part of it. I think she does that well already, and that just kind of comes naturally. So it's having that love of AV as well as that logical background that's going to make her excel, you know, and exceed within the industry. But it's finding those students, right? I mean, how many of them are out there? And we just got to narrow that down and try and figure that out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think there's a bunch out there. I don't know if they know it yet. I think there's a bunch of guys running around out there that are extremely smart. There's a bunch of guys running around out there that have that logical mindset, that can think like that. And if you think about it, we talk to them every day. We go to the grocery store, and it's the guy at the grocery store that like bags your groceries correctly. He puts the cans at the bottom just because that's what makes sense. I mean, when I was recruiting for companies and trying to get new techs, I would look for little traits like that and just tell the guys, hey, the 401k here at the Food Lion, I bet you I could beat the match on that. Why don't you give me a call?
Cricket.
And now,
you know, when I was at my old integrator, my last job, I was there for about 10 years, about 3 years into it, you know, our Crestron programmer had quit on us, and we needed somebody pretty desperately. And we couldn't find anybody, and they wouldn't give me a budget to hire someone certified, if you will, right? Like, I needed to get somebody low cost and train them. And, you know, we ended up hiring an out-of-work guy that was programming, you know, machine logics for assembly lines or something like that. And just wanted to get, you know, knew somebody that worked at our company, thought AV was cool, and he worked out great. And he's still one of the best programmers at that company. So, you know, that's moving from one industry to the next, not the young crowd, but you know, just finding the people with that logic mentality.
I think another big key, aside from finding somebody that has just the straight aptitude to do it, is you have to find somebody that is really excited about doing it, that derives some sort of enjoyment from solving some of these problems. Because, you know, quite frankly, our industry isn't very rewarding, you know, unless you can kind of, you know, derive your own enjoyment.
Yeah, when's my reward coming? I've been in this industry for so long, really.
Man, I mailed you a glitter bomb last week. What are you talking about?
Yeah, missed.
So I think you got a point there, but I think there's a lot of things nowadays, especially with the industry, the way it's going, there's a lot of things that could be rewarding. There's so many things new to our industry, aside of the, like the 24K gold TV that's coming out and being able to put anything and everything on the network. There's other things that we're getting into. There's new things with digital signage, telemedicine. And I start talking to kids about, they're like, what is the AV industry? I'm like, you like video games, bro? They're like, yeah, I do.
So you brought up an interesting topic of, you know, there's so many interesting things, you know, there's 4K, et cetera. As a programmer, that means nothing to me. It's just another display.
It's window dressing, but it's something like that I could get somebody and grab them and sit them and let them play a video game. And they're like, oh, this video game's pretty cool. And I said, yeah, you want to know how to make it better. And now you can make it better for other people. Or things like drones. Man, if you want to see a kid get excited, slap a drone in his hand and then tell him you can program this to fly itself or fly little roots around. And he's like, I can do that. I can play this video game. He might have never cared about drones in his entire life, but you could sit him down and give him something that moves around, or, you know, you can find the thing that somebody likes and relate it to the industry and kind of get him excited.
Why don't we just find drone programmers?
No, I completely agree with you that you have to find something to get somebody excited about. I think it's just much more difficult as a programmer to get excited about some things. You know, you come out with certain things and you're like, oh, 4K TV. But when you boil it all down, it's just another display endpoint with a different IR driver and a different RS-232 protocol. And it's going to keep me busy for about 3 hours of my time before I have a module to write it. And then it's boring again.
I try and tell that to my customers about 4K. I'm like, hey, bro, you know, you're all excited when you see 4K going in. But after like 2 weeks, you're going to be watching football and be like, it's just a TV.
To kind of build on what Chris said about being excited, I think that's actually how I got my job, because I mean, my programming experience is extremely limited in that where I was before being with an integrator, we had AMX systems that did not work at all and we had nobody to fix it. And I was just like, hey, send me to programming one and I'll see if I can, you know, fiddle with it. And from there, it just kind of grew into just playing with that constantly because nobody used that room anyway. And then, you know, recruiter found me for one job and they were like, well, actually, you have this kind of mindset and this kind of experience. We'd like to put you in this programming position, this entry-level position. We'll bring you in. We'll send you to Crestron for programming. Oh, you know AMX too? Well, we could use you for service because we don't have anybody that really knows AMX. But we have all these systems, you know, and with government contractors and things like that. So, you know, in the 3.5 weeks I've been there, I've already gone and troubleshooted 4 AMX systems just because I simply know how to go in, look at the code and change one line that can, you know, change the world in that system. So, but Crestron, I mean, I know a little bit about Crestron. I know a little bit about Simple Windows. And I guess in my interview, I was excited enough about it, excited enough about being in the AV industry in general, that they decided to offer me a job. And, you know, like I said before, there's a lot riding on me being successful with it, but I think I'm going to have enough work to get enough practice to become a better programmer, because it's really all about, you know, you're learning these things and then, you know, using them. And if you don't use them, you're just going to lose it.
I think you hit on something really good there. You said I had to go out and do a bunch of service calls. And that's, seriously, for programmers, that's crucial. That's the field time that you need to get that experience. And I always tell my junior guys, it's like a video game. If you don't play, you're not going to get PowerPoints, bro. Like, if you don't go out and do different missions on your video game, you're not going to get any experience hit points. For programmers to go out to a service call to a system that you've never seen or a place that you've never been to, and you have, like, the basic code that was supposed to be on there, or maybe you can harvest something that was there and kind of root through it. That's that experience those guys need. So I definitely think, like, getting a junior programmer and sticking him in a service role, man, you just gave that guy a huge opportunity.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's you got to watch out for in that type of situation is because there are, you know, one of the things, the overarching theme that we've been talking about is that there aren't enough good quality programmers in the AV industry. You know, you have that junior guy looking through code that might not be best practice, you know, and you don't necessarily want them to pick up some of those bad habits, you know, which is one of those areas where, like what Hope said earlier, you know, having a shop with more than one programmer, you have people with experience that, you know, have been in the AV industry for a while. You have to kind of rely on those more senior people to mentor your junior guys and show them, you know, some of these little tricks that can, you know, save them a lot of time and also show them how to solve some of these problems within the environments that we're working in.
Mm-hmm.
Hope, we can't hear you.
Okay. You're
totally muted, Hope.
Oh, Hope's talking. She's saying some real good things. Can anybody translate that?
I think she said Krista just put some more duct tape on Corey's mouth.
She was saying, yeah, Chris, that's a great point. And
yeah, I think that's what she was saying.
I'm going to wear a big cat head.
Yeah, that's right. She says, I'm going to be Kitty Purry. I'm real close.
Is that why Chuck kept interrupting me? I was like, I can't get a word in edgewise. Because nobody can hear me. Oh,
somebody put you on mute. I don't know. Rich, did you put her on mute? What happened, Rich, huh?
It was a hardware issue. I was unmuted, but my microphone is apparently.
Oh, I think Rich did it.
I blame the programmer.
Yeah, that's it. The programmer did it.
Billy, you're already better than a certified programmer because you could unmute yourself. I was just gonna say I think our industry probably needs to offer up more internships, and it's probably unfortunate that some of the bigger companies would probably offer internships and then lose a lot of those people once they got more experienced and went other places where they could make more money.
So what about something like a contracted internship? Like we teach you for a couple years at a really low pay scale, and when you get good and certified, you have to stay here per contract for so many years.
So we certification becomes real incentive. Yeah.
We could maybe do that, Chuck. I mean, we've done both at my work where we've done paid and unpaid, but I think some of it is too, you have to kind of get them like interested in the beginning. If they're not interested in that first like 3 to 6 months, then it doesn't seem to matter a lot of times.
When you say they, are you talking about the employer or the employee?
No, the employee. Because what I've also seen at many jobs I've worked at, not necessarily where I'm at now, where they'll bring in interns, and granted, sometimes the point of an intern is to give them the crap job, but then all of a sudden they just get stuck doing these menial tasks. Like back in the day, like remember when you had to print out manuals and hand it to the customer instead of giving it to them on a thumb drive or electronically or whatever? Like that's what the interns would end up doing. So they were
not. Wait a minute, that was back in the day? I just did that this week.
But see, that printing out the intern or printing out the manual, I think it's kind of crucial because those guys look to see, hey, from this manual, these people want to press this button, press that button, press this button, and then get this action to happen. That's actually kind of like paying their dues. That's like techs pulling cable.
That would be having your
interns write user guides, and that might actually be useful for the
level. I mean, that's like barely a step above go get my coffee and my shirt at the dry cleaner. Like that used to frustrate me when I saw these kids coming in and doing that. But maybe they knew that when they brought these interns in. Maybe they knew they were just coming in for the summer and they just needed the credits at their college and that was it.
I have seen
other interns that developed into other, you know, things where they then become, you know, lower level techs and work their way up to mid-grade techs and whatnot. So
there is a school of thought that if you need a user guide for your UI, you're doing it wrong.
That's a whole other show. Billy, I realized I didn't fully answer your question earlier about what you do to make sure that you set yourself up for success. It sounds like you have a natural aptitude and a love for doing this. I am unmuted, right?
Yeah, you're unmuted. It's all okay.
Right. I was unmuted before. It's just there's something wrong with this.
Your mute's on.
All right. Anyways, I think aptitude and desire to learn are like that gets you like halfway there. programmers always blame the hardware. It's because everyone always blames us. And beyond that, make sure you're paying, you know, very good attention in your classes. Take lots of notes. You'll say, oh, I'll remember this later. You won't. They throw so much stuff at you. And then two things you should do when you get home. One is sign up for the Crestron Yahoo Groups, programmers Yahoo Groups listserv. It's an unbelievable amount of emails, so you're going to want to sign up for the digest version of it.
I already did.
But I've learned so much from those people, and I still learn stuff from those people. And sometimes I'm like, get out of my head, because I'm having a problem with a piece of really random equipment. And then like 2 minutes later, an email comes in and someone's having the same one. So you'll learn a lot from that. And then the other is set up a whole ton of eBay alerts and just buy a bunch of crap, put it in your house, and then figure out what you can do with it. And I mean, the best way you, and if your company is really serious about you learning stuff, then they should be giving you some cast off stuff as well, because you only learn this stuff by doing it. And the best way to do it is to tinker with it, especially if there's no pressure. And you can just say, all right, what happens if I do this? Oh, that went horribly. All right, what happens if I do this? So, you know, my family is they are my test bed. Sometimes it drives, you know, them a little nuts because they just want to watch football. And,
you know, Hope,
that's the first rule. You don't make any changes on Sunday afternoon.
Oh, well, I'm actually the one that watches football. So I reserve the changes for right before The Walking Dead.
You know what's really interesting about
seriously?
That is, as an AV designer, I took a couple of, you know, level one, level two programming classes with Crestron because I felt it would make me a better designer if I understood the intricacies of the programming. Mm-hmm. And then I knew that you had to keep up on it, so I did exactly that. I went on eBay and I bought a whole bunch of Crestron stuff for my house, and I was like, this is awesome. I have a whole home automation system. And then after about 2 years, my wife finally just got fed up with nothing ever working and made me have our programmer come fix it all.
Well,
so I guess it works to some extent, but, you know, just be cautious of the eBay thing, especially if you're not a programmer.
Well, fortunately, the company I do work for has a very large room of stuff that still works, but it's there for service, and the head of service has been like, if you need anything, come in and grab it. So there's a lot of equipment that I can go in and mess with. When I first got there, my office was loaded with stuff, but it was old stuff because they haven't had a staff programmer for maybe 2-3 years. And it was no, I'm not even looking at this. Get it away. So there's a VCR in my office. Who uses a VCR, honestly?
The guy who was on our show last week.
Corey
does, actually. But I mean, I can use it to test like IR and things like that. But and that's just why I figured it was there. But I thank you for that advice, because I did sign up for the Yahoo group. A friend of mine was like, hey, go on this, follow that right away, because you'll learn so much stuff from that, from what these guys are talking about. You know, I think the company I'm working for isn't setting me up to fail, obviously, because they brought me on to work for them. So, you know, they're going to set me up for success. And, but I can, you know, it's only going to depend on how much I put into it too. And, in my older age, not college age, I've gotten a little more studious with things. Had I devoted as much time in education as I do now, as I did when I was in college, I might have not, well, I don't know. Anyway, maybe my GPA would have been higher than a 2.2, but it's fine, because I went to school for music recording technology, and it doesn't matter what your GPA is, obviously, because now I work in the AV industry like everyone else that went to school for music recording technology. So, you know, I'm definitely, you know, just bearing down and doing everything that I can to hopefully succeed at this. And on the design half of it, somebody once told me that they look at programming as virtual design. So if you can look at it from that mindset, as an AV designer, you know, it also helps whenever you're trying to get that automation and get that equipment going.
Yeah, no, that's definitely an accurate assessment. I think that a good 50% of what I do is not painting myself into a corner. Because if you don't plan for the future, if you don't plan for changes, your life is just going to be a world of hurt when the customer comes back and says, yeah, we want it to work a little differently. You know, you need to make sure that you're as flexible as possible with your programming so that you don't end up in a situation where you're having to wholesale rewrite large sections of code because you didn't plan for changes. So you want to make sure that when you write things, you write like a larger framework to work within, and then limit what the user actually is exposed to based on what their requirements are. One other suggestion that I can make for you is that there are programmers out there that I've worked with that will help you with other things. I know that there are programmers on the Crestron Labs forum, which is a dedicated forum that for Crestron certified programmers that I have worked with via private message that have provided a lot of help for some stuff that I've had difficulty with. So there are people out there that are willing to help you, you know, solve some of the problems that you might be having and provide some guidance to you. So if you can find people like that, that's definitely important, because becoming a Crestron programmer, or for that matter, any programmer in the AV industry, I mean, I know we talk a lot about Crestron, but AMX2, you can't really do it alone. You need to find somebody that can help you progress through your career. Otherwise, if you have to try and figure everything out yourself, it's almost impossible.
Hey, Johnny, do you have any stuff and things for us?
Yeah, is this thing working? Is this thing on? It's working. It's a really sad stuff and things, unless you're not into family. But today, I accidentally mistook the Facebook status box for Google or Google search, and now I don't have to go to family functions anymore. So that's a thing. In terms of programming and things like that, who should be... I think manufacturers or integration firms who look a better programmer, I think it's almost like a two-sided thing. It's like, you know, to program well, you know, obviously you need to understand code and logic and some sort of steps and macros. But at the same time, without any like maybe install or how systems work, it doesn't really do a whole lot of good. So it'd almost be better to start with someone who's a low-level tech that has some sort of hands-on experience in how AV systems work together. Or any sort of, even if they're from a different, maybe not AV. Like I started off really, really young, you know, in a panel shop, electrical, commercial stuff. And at the time, I didn't care. I was a kid, and I just wanted to go outside and enjoy summer. And industrial controls, things working down the line, wiring, servicing, and did other winery stuff. And from the other side, I don't know. I don't know if there is a best person to be a programmer, right? I think Chris pointed out you want someone who has like drive, right? Something that excites them, because if you do the same thing over and over again, you're like, great, it's just another panel. Who cares if it's the latest 4K, 8K, whatever, curve screen, who cares panel? It's just a panel. So if it doesn't excite you, then why even be in this industry at all, right? Like what's the point of even having this job? For me, I get to do a lot of custom stuff. So every day seems to be a challenge, but not every day is custom. And it can get old, but at the same time, because technology changes so often, so rapidly, we'll never learn everything. And it does kind of get exciting and it can get boring. So it's really tough to say who should be the best or the best ideal candidate for programming in the industry. I don't really know if there is an answer for that. I mean, would you guys say that there is?
Well, I think, you know, again, what you said, there's more than, I think the big two things are just, you have to have the aptitude for it. That's a baseline. And I think after that, it's actually drive. I think that that's the second most important attribute. And you brought up an interesting point about, you know, a 4K display, you know, again, just being another display. And I have to say that what excites a programmer about a certain project is very different from what excites a program, excites a technician or an engineer about a project. For example, one of the projects that I had to do recently was I had to rewrite the entire Cisco, or write a module for a Cisco C-series codec that, for lack of a better term, almost emulated the Cisco UI that they provide, because they wanted it integrated into their platform. And the only way to do that was to write that module entirely in C#. And I found that actually to be very rewarding, because at the time I didn't really know C# very well. I didn't have a lot of experience with it, and I learned a lot through that process. So that whole time that I spent working on that and failing and banging my head against the wall to where, to the point where I finally got this product that was really well polished, you know, at the end of it, I felt really rewarded by that. You know, not just that, you know, that, yeah, you know, I got paid, but personally, I saw a challenge that was there that was presented to me, and I was able to overcome that challenge. And that in almost was that, that's where I felt really happy about it. You know, when I came home and I tried to tell my wife about it, and she had no idea what the hell I was talking about. But
yeah, but it was all worth it at the end, though, right? Right, like something that you wouldn't have done. You learned some C#, but it probably took you a really long time of being frustrated. And at the end of all of it, you learned some stuff, and you finally achieved what you thought at the time was like, ugh, why are we even doing it this way? This isn't the normal way.
And exactly. All the frustration that I went through in order to achieve that end was all justified. It was like the end, I was like, yes, I finally did it. It works. And I feel awesome about it. And just, you know, that's one of those things that, again, you know, what excites the rest of the AV industry doesn't necessarily excite a programmer. You know, 4K is great, but it's just another display. You know, DM is great, but it's just another switcher. You know, it's not anything that's super exciting. It's the logic behind it that drives you to control something that is complex and has a whole lot of interaction between it. That's what's really exciting to a programmer.
Multiple IP IDs on a touch panel. Woo! I think at the end of the day, the thing that makes me the happiest as a programmer is being able to say, I made that work with my mind. You know what I mean? Like, someone hit a button and all the lights came on, and I did that with my mind. And most people would be like, yeah, the lights came on. I could have done that with a light switch. So that's where you have sort of slightly different motivations. You know, it's not necessarily that it looks cool and that it's shiny, but that it really works and that it's solid and that you, you know, you figured out how to make all the pieces come together.
If you did your job right as a programmer, no one's going to know that you really did anything at all. Like you said, you know, I can turn that light on with a switch, or I can turn that TV on, who cares? But all this stuff in the background and all this programming and interconnections, and maybe not the typical way of switching something or communicating between two devices that possibly wouldn't have worked other than just individual switches and IOs, the end user doesn't care. They don't even know. As long as it works, that's all they care about. And for you as the programmer, that one little achievement to make something work is the best feeling in the world, right? Because you could spend hours, weeks writing modules for something that maybe doesn't even exist yet. Or it's like, why would I even want to control that? You may think that this is stupid. But after achieving that one little achievement that could be tremendous because it doesn't exist, is like one of the best feelings ever.
Totally. And, you know, I tell my customers all the time, it takes a lot of work to make something this simple. You know, they said there's only 6 buttons. Yeah, because I figured out which 6 buttons you need. You don't need 7. You know, and if you needed 7, I did my job wrong. But, you know, you don't. You need 6.
Yeah, it's sad, too, because some of the things that really taken for granted. I was talking to a programmer. The one that I said 3 buttons was too much. They're like, oh, yeah, you can program an Xbox Kinect camera to recognize somebody's face and set the room up for their exact specifications, their lighting, their computer that they want up. So they walk in the room, the system turns on. And, you know, they're like, well, that's what it should do, right? I kill you. Like, there was a lot of thought that went into that to get your face to make it the key to open up Pandora's box. And they're like, well, that's just what should, that's what should happen every time I just walk in. It works. So it's a, I look at the, that as like a thankless job. Like, well, I walk in and it works, right? It's supposed to do that every time. Like, that dude put a lot of thought into that.
It's kind of like the theory with good voice reinforcement shouldn't be heard. Good programming should never be noticed.
Yeah.
It's only the bad programming that's noticed.
Yeah, it's when you're mashing a button like 60 times. Like, why won't this projector turn on?
No matter how many times you tell an end user, the touch panels aren't pressure sensitive.
Yeah, no, the harder you press it, the more it's going to do what you want it to do. That's right. What we tell them. Hey, Corey, do you have any bacons that you want to talk about? Corey, take yourself off mute or I'm going to skip over and skip you totally.
Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. I was removing the duct tape. It's a long process.
He was watching reruns of Fringe.
Oh, you saw that.
He was finding the mute button.
I thought he was uploading something to the cloud.
You know what happened? I don't know why, but the mute button all of a sudden went to the other side of the screen. I don't know. Rich, I think you are doing things tonight that are just causing all kinds of grief.
I secretly have more skills.
Rich brings the secret skills to AV Power Up. I am going to bring some bacon strips tonight. And the bacon strip I am going to bring to you is not by me, believe it or not. And I was actually looking for a good bacon written by a real programmer, but Hope hasn't contributed anything in a little while. So I am going to go right to my friend Lee Distad, that other guy out of Canada. Haggling, you're doing it wrong. Lee writes some great blogs on Rave, I've got to say. And you know something? He likes to do the short and sweet to the point, and his stuff is great. So anybody out there, if you haven't been reading Lee Distad's blogs, please do, because they're terrific. But this one about haggling, and I tell you, I've been in my own situations where I've dealt with hagglers and all. And this one basically... you know, when somebody, you know, asks for the best price, what's your best price? So he said, my old standby when somebody asked me, what's your best price, was to quote three times what the regular price was. He'd say, what? He'd say, oh, you meant my lowest price. No, three times is my best price. If I get that out of you, I'm taking the rest of the day off. So, you know, I guess if somebody asks you, what's your best price? Well, it's basically what's your best price for you. So, and then somebody else said, well, no, they normally do two times the price. So I think we all like to make a dime off a haggler, or at least I know I would. So Lee Distad has a great story about that. And again, Lee Distad, great stories on Rave, great blogs, great bacons, whatever you call these things these days. And you know, again, my good friend Lee Distad, props to you, Lee. Real good stuff. That's it. That's all I got.
Yay. Awesome.
Comments,
thanks.
Quotes, don't care. I'm going on mute.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks, Corey. Rich, what are the hot jobs that you have this week?
Hot jobs. We got hot jobs here. Hey, got the greatest website ever, tierpm.com. You don't have to do the W's. So I found that out the hard way. So I'm going to get right to it. Job number 387. AV project manager, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This ideal candidate will have at least 3 to 5 years of recent audiovisual commercial integration industry experience in the role as a project manager and have an understanding of commercial construction methods required to support the installation of ceiling and wall-mounted audio and video systems. CTS certification required or must be obtained within 1 year. And a PMP certification is nice to have. That is job 387, AV project manager. Moving right on, right along, we have job 388, regional manager, AV installers. This is a good one. Listen up, people. Chicago, Illinois. This ideal candidate will have at least 3 to 5 years experience in a leadership role managing teams of between 3 and 10 installers on commercial integration projects. Have exceptional customer service skills and be able to wear multiple hats while assisting sales teams and supporting existing customer deployments. This is also a hands-on lead audiovisual installation technician role. Applicants must have recent hands-on commercial integration installation experience, such as lead AV installer. That is job 388, regional manager, AV installer, Chicago, Illinois. And last but not least, job 390, AV design engineer, located right here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This ideal candidate will be very highly skilled in the design, installation, troubleshooting of advanced audio-visual, video conferencing, telepresence, and associated control systems. Experience designing with the latest AV products, including AMX, Biamp, Crestron, Extron, Panasonic, Polycom, Sony, and Tamberg. CTS and DMC or similar certifications are nice to have. That is job 390, AV design engineer, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Back to you, Krista.
You know, that is, don't go for that job, because Tamberg hasn't existed for a long time.
Quite a while, yeah.
Yeah, they're gone. Bye-bye.
As cool as all that programming stuff that you guys just spoke about, I sadly don't have it yet, but I'm working towards it.
Hey, wait, when are you doing your CTS test?
Next Tuesday, October 20th.
Yeah, that's a good day.
Yes, it is. Because Wednesday night, we are going to be celebrating.
No, I'm going to be busy Wednesday night.
Well, no. I'll be celebrating here because I will be newly CTS certified.
There's not a show next Wednesday.
Well, that's okay, because I'm still going to be celebrating my new CTS certification.
Hey, Rich, I'll do a show with you, Rich, okay? Right, me and cool. You, okay? We'll do a
don't
show.
Don't worry.
Krista doesn't have to be here anymore, okay? In fact, I can host a show. It's okay. Don't worry.
Oh, my God, no.
Yes. Yes, you remember the shows I hosted. They were great. They were epic.
I'm trying to forget the shows you hosted.
In fact, remember the one when I was in Florida? Wasn't that a great show, huh? Man, I'm going to do it again.
I've got therapy bills stacked up from that show.
I think listeners have therapy bills stacked up from the show, too. Man. So, no, don't worry. I'll never host one of these shows again. Krista's the best. She'll always be. And duct tape. Bye.
I just don't know how to say no, and that's my problem. So that's it, guys. It's time to close up shop. Jeremy, are you still there? Are you taking the train to Siberia? Where are you?
No, I think he's gone. Oh, wait.
Oh, there
no,
he
I'm
is.
Back. I'm back.
That was,
back.
Okay.
How'd
good.
You do
it's
that?
Totally magic.
Wow. Yeah.
I literally have been on the call the entire time, except for the past, like, literally 10 seconds when my phone just died.
Wow. Hey, Jeremy, how was dinner?
You know, it's. I'm starting to regret it. I'm not going to lie.
Jeremy had a regretful dinner tonight.
I very much did. The like you said, the cheeseburger on the train is just like the gas station sushi. It's a terrible idea.
Don't ever eat the train cheeseburger.
Gas station sushi is a sweet band name.
I had no time to eat anything today, and I was starving, and I rushed out of class to make my train, so. I just had to eat something.
Let that be a lesson to you, sports fans. No train cheeseburgers or tacos, although Johnny may disagree. He thinks tacos are good just about anywhere you could possibly be, right, Johnny?
Unless it's on the back alley dice game, that's shady. You don't want that.
Yeah. Okay, well, there you heard it here first, listeners. There you go. Valuable information you've gotten from AV Power Up today.
That's all right, Jeremy. Just wait till Sunday. You can have my ribs on the barbecue.
I'm not going to fill up at the dinner I'm going to before then, that's for sure.
Yeah, yes. Corey and Krista's going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Pinchy's
going to be here. Uh-huh.
Matt I will Woods. See your ribs and I will raise you smoked brisket.
Mm.
Oh.
Oh, there's going to be party time here in DC Metro. And by the way, I don't know how many listening there will be listening, but there is a big party Friday night in Gaithersburg, Maryland. The Drunk Naked Pirates will be playing.
Yarr.
I don't know if Chuck's going to be there, but I think I will be. So can't wait to see the boys.
Now, Friday night, I'm taking my PMP test for like the 21st time.
Oh, okay. Well, good luck.
I'm running 13.1 miles this weekend.
That's right.
Way more fun than barbecue and beer.
Hope Roth will be running. Yes. As Katy Perry, we hope.
The best thing about running 13.1 miles is that you can eat whatever you want for the rest of the day.
Hope, why are you running 13.1 miles?
I am running a half marathon for charity.
What charity would that be?
The Children's Hospital at Dartmouth in Hanover, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm. Chad Heroes. Yeah.
Chad Hero. And if you Google Chad Hero Hope Roth, you can make a contribution. I have been very well supported by the AV industry. To be uncharacteristically serious for a moment, it has really been very touching. The lot of shares from people on the show and listeners and guests even. And it's been really great. I've raised, I think I'm up to about $1,600 at this point. And I do have a very ridiculous costume that I will be running in if I hit 2,000. But no matter what, I will be running in a costume, and there will be pictures. So thank you to everybody who has supported me, and there will be a lot of hills.
The industry's greatest programmer will be running in the Chad Hero, and we're all rooting for everybody out there. Please donate. I know there have been more donations today. And we want to get her to Kitty Purry. How far are we away from Kitty Purry again, Hope?
I think it's about $500.
500. We can do that easy, right?
Oh, yeah.
I will admit here that if I get within spitting distance, I'll just top myself up because
all right.
That's my dedication.
Okay. And she will be dressed as a cat-ten.
Yes.
A cat-ten.
Do they accept Canadian currency?
I got a lot to unload too.
You got some loonies.
Loonies.
I mean, I could probably print some.
I got some like crown and real up there in the.
I think I might have some pesos and euros.
I think I got a Bitcoin or two stored away.
No Bitcoin allowed.
If you had one Bitcoin, you wouldn't even be doing the show right now. you would have like your own island that you were god of somewhere.
Hey, Jeremy, you got a Bitcoin there?
I do, but the value is not that high. I will tell you that. I have a couple of, and I do. I cannot afford an island.
Jeremy has them. They can't afford an island. So everybody out there, sorry, Johnny. That was not a stuff or a thing tonight.
Well, I mean, you probably can afford an island like Eastern Europe or something, or Bratislava.
Bratislava.
There, no, give it to Hope. Just don't buy an island. Just give it all to Hope, okay?
Okay.
All right. Krista?
All right. So cool. Thanks, Jeremy, for joining us. We miss you. Hope your students are doing well.
They are. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris Tatton, for joining us. I got your name right this time because, you know, I've been looking at it for the last hour.
Thanks for having me on. It was great.
Thanks, Billy Seiler, for joining us. Thanks for being our number one fanboy.
I do what I can. And thanks for the advice, Chris and Hope. And everybody. I'll try and apply it, and hopefully we'll be even bigger frenemies, Krista.
Yeah, that's the goal. You know, frenemies are good. So on behalf of Hope Roth, Johnny Mota, Chuck Espinoza, Rich Prevetti, Corey Moss, and me, Krista Bender, thanks for listening to AV Power Up.
Yes, Chris Tatton got it right the first time, huh? Billy Seiler, you are so much our number one fanboy that you can come on the show again next year, okay? And for all of you listening, thank you very much, and we will see you next time.